we're in the middle of Perek Dalet, and the discussion is about how one acquires Zahirus. Remember, Zahirus is the first Mida of being careful with what you do. It's the being careful with the negative things of the Torah, as opposed to Zrizus, which is being careful to do the things he's supposed to do. This is to be careful not to do the things you're not supposed to do. So that is the Mida of Zahirus. And the Mesillas Yesharim says that one of the ways of acquiring Zahirus is by constantly being aware of the consequences of a person's actions. That nothing goes without some kind of consequence. Nothing is overlooked. Nothing is just forgiven without some consequence, even the smallest thing. And the way to get an understanding of that and to be aware of that is by learning various portions in the Torah and in the Chazal that speak about great people who did what seems to be very minor things, and yet the consequences were significant. And he began to give examples of them, which we've explained some. We have most of them yet to go. The basic idea here, which we didn't discuss, is the concept of Mida Keneged Mida, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes people in kind, and that the punishment fits the crime. And he, in each one of these situations, explains how that is. The last one we explained was Dina, the fact that Yaakov Avinu hid Dina and didn't want Esav to see her and perhaps marry her, and in that way he held back a chesed from Esav. Maybe Dina would have had a good influence on him. And we explained that, what exactly the sin was. I mean, you don't go marry your daughter off to a Russia in hoping that she'll influence him and maybe he'll influence her. We explained it. That was the last thing we did before I left. Explained that in great detail. Before we go on to the other examples that he gives another four or five examples, which I want to explain, which probably take up the whole time. I want to first explain this concept of Mida Keneged Mida. Why does God punish in kind? And there are four or five ideas. The most simple one is that punishments are not to get revenge on the person, not to hurt the person, but they are lessons in teaching a person not to make the mistake again. So if the punishment didn't fit the crime, you wouldn't be able to relate the punishment with the crime, and you wouldn't know what you have to correct. So the Rabbanu Shalom gives a person an opportunity to understand what he did wrong so he can correct it, and the punishment is part of the process of education to understand what you did wrong and what the consequences were, and therefore to learn to correct the situation. That's the first thing. However, certain times that doesn't apply because the punishment is that a person dies in this world and he can't learn too much after that to correct the situation. So then there's a second idea in punishment for the sake of education, not for the education of the person who did the sin, but to educate other people that they shouldn't commit the same sin and they should see what the consequences are from committing such a sin. They should learn from it. That's like the Egyptians being drowned. It made an impression on Klal Yisrael. Ki badover asher zodu aleihem, they got punished in kind. So we learn from there what the terrible things the Egyptians did and the fact that there's justice in this world and that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't let the evil go by, indefinitely. So it's also an educational process, but not for the person who's being punished, but for other people. That's a second idea. Another idea is, and that is that there shouldn't be a Chilul Hashem. People see bad happen in the world to people, they have questions, how come this person's suffering or whatever, but if the punishment fits the crime, it takes away the Chilul Hashem, that people realize that the person is probably being punished for something that he did wrong, and it's deserved, it's justified, there's a purpose for it, it's not just stop. So that's another reason why the Rabbanu Shalom tries to make the punishment fit the crime, that one will understand for the punishment that there was a crime, that there was something wrong.
Is the Rabbi talking about a formal punishment? Or just that a person gets sick?
Everything.
Can we judge and say that's the reason?
No, we can't know, but we know that there is a purpose to it. The person himself should take a lesson from it. And other people should realize that it's not, people just don't get sick for no reason. There must be a reason. The reason doesn't have to mean that the person did something wrong. But there's something that person needs to correct, or that the person needs to improve, or that fits the tzara that he's going through. That's all. Okay? It's not arbitrary. There's a purpose for it. That's the idea. Not necessarily that the person did something wrong, but that the person needs this. There's some purpose for it. Sometimes because the person did something wrong, sometimes for other reasons.
We can't know what exactly it is that we did wrong. As long as we take a lesson.
Right. Sometimes you can know. I mean, what's it called? First of all, in time in the Nevuah, they did know. Even not in the Nevi'im, the Chachamim tell us that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of this sin, that sin, or whatever, so we did know. Right, where things were. So it's not that nobody can ever know. Right. Today, it's very difficult for a person to know exactly what it is most of the time, even though he can get a good idea sometimes of what it is when he inspects himself and introspects, right, to try to find what the cause is. A person can come up with some idea that may not be 100%, we explain this by the Shoah, may not be that this is 100% the reason, but it's at least something that I know I can learn from. So there's a benefit to it. It may not be the only purpose, and it may not be the purpose, but it's something that if it affects me, then I can learn from it, then it's for sure something that I can use in a positive way from the negative that came. That much, yeah. That much a person can know. Sometimes we can know. And I remember once that it was clear why something was happening to me. It couldn't have been clearer. I was driving with somebody, and the person sitting next to me was telling me a whole tirade against one of the Gedolim. And the person was an older person, at that time I wasn't, and out of respect for him, I didn't want to, like, you know, I just nodded my head and, you know, listened. And the next morning, I woke up with the worst earache I ever had in my life, in that ear. It was pretty obvious what it was. And I called the guy on the phone, and I said, look, last night, I just listened to what you said. This morning, I have the most terrible earache in the ear that you were talking to, and I want to tell you that you said something wrong, and I want to protest what you said, because I want my earache to go away. Did it work? It eventually went away. I still don't have it now. So that was pretty obvious that it wasn't a mystery. That was really scary there. For at least the next 10, 15 minutes, I didn't do anything wrong. Worrying that, you know, that... Yes?
Are there times when we think that they're punishments, but they're really not? But it's really for a positive reason, but we don't see it. Or is it only how we handle it if it's going to be?
No, sometimes it depends. Again, the most we can do, like Rafi said, is to get a general idea of how I can use this in a positive way. How can I use it as a prod to direct me? to be sure that it's a punishment, it's an opportunity for improvement. That's not the kmina. As long as I know that it's not arbitrary, it's not a coincidence, not an accident, it's something that I can use in a positive way, so use it in a positive way. If you can find something to correct, fine. If you can find something to improve, fine. That's the most that a person can do. Most of the time.
To grow from it.
Right, exactly.
Not to have this view of Hashem's
error. It doesn't have to. It doesn't have to be, what's it called, but the possibility that it is, again, punishments are all to let you grow, to correct, whatever. They're not to get even with you. They're not to hurt you. It's the opposite. Okay. And if it's to hurt a person, it's not to hurt them, it's to help other people correct things or whatever. When there's no hope for that person and they have to leave this world or whatever it may be, right? So at least other people be affected in a positive way from that. Okay, that's...
Because I'll say different things. You know, about Yisurim, says a person that receives Yisurim comes, should be passed with Yisurim.
Right.
But when there's Zion, that's just a question of Rabban explains, just bringing the potential into the... to realize it. I have a question if you have to be passed with Yisurim, just let's go through it. So to be... So one.
We still have to be passed with Yisurim, to know how to use it properly. In either
that's
case,
not on the past, that's on the future, on the future.
Yeah, okay, but not every Nisoyan is Yisurin. It's an opportunity.
Different one needs to be able to determine which one it is.
Not really, because if a Nisoyan comes through Yisurin, then it's Yisurin. If it doesn't come through Yisurin, right, it's just an opportunity that a person has, that's not nothing necessarily that's harmful to the person, then that's a different story. But if the Nisoyan is Yisurin that he gets, then that falls into the category of Yisur. Okay. Okay, another idea of why Mida Keneged Mida is not so much what God's intention is, but that's the way the world was made. The world is a world of justice. Din. This world was created by Midas HaDin. And the Mesillas Yesharim is going to explain that even though there's Rachamim, that does not take away the Din. There always is justice. Justice means you get what you deserve. And the purpose of this world is that people should get what they deserve, not get free things, because free things aren't appreciated. So you should earn your Olam Haba. We've explained many times that that is the ideal. And the Rabban Hashem really created the world to exist with total justice. He only added mercy because it was impossible without it, because most people wouldn't be able to exist with total justice. But if somebody can exist with total justice, then that's what is beneficial to him. And that's why there are individuals in this world, very few, but great individuals, that were able to exist on total justice with no mercy. The Yaakov Avinu was like that. Rabbi Akiva was like that. And the benefit is that you get what you earn without any help, so it's all your doings. You get punished, right? The repercussions, forget about punish, you get the repercussions for the small things that are wrong have to be compensated for. That's part of the din. But the benefits are unbelievable. So, therefore, this world was created to function with justice. Meaning, everything has a repercussion, has to be compensated for. Nothing is overlooked. That's what the Mesillas Yesharim is going to bring down in a little while, I mean, not this week, but in the next page or whatever, that a person who says that God just overlooks things, his inside should be overlooked. And one of the ways of understanding it is, you wouldn't say, well, I can drink poison, it won't have any effect. God made an orderly system, and if you drink poison, it has an effect. Not going to be overlooked. That's part of the way the world was made, that things affect other things, and there are repercussions, and there are reactions or whatever. And it's just not overlooked. The Mela, that's the way that God made the world. That if things happen, there are repercussions, there are reactions, right? There are laws of spiritual nature. And therefore, if something is done that is wrong, right, that's out of the nature of the world, then there has to be something to compensate for it. and that's part of the nature of the world. And therefore, the punishment fits the crime, not because it's a punishment that God is meting out, it's because that's the way the world was created. That if something happens that's not in the nature of the world, then something has to compensate for it.
Yeah. I have a question exactly on this point. It came with the idea of the Aguilar Rufa. Why, the Aguilar Rufa, as I was explaining at one point, it started to not make sense for exactly this reason. Because now we don't know who killed this person between the cities. So we go and sacrifice the blood, so the blood should be spilled for the Aguilar instead of the person who really should be getting killed. Does that mean the person gets all scot-free? Or does he
no, this, is, this only helps until we find the murderer. It's a stopgap measure. We find other things like that, too. A person does something, he's not sure if he did something wrong, he brings an Ashim Toli. It helps to ward off the repercussions until you find out and can do something more significant.
So
the more significant
the
is executing the murder.
So you do both. So it sort of seems like...
Right, right. This is a stopgap measure.
The Sanhedrin, of course, like no one got death penalty when they should have. I mean, that seems like that's a problem then.
No, if they should have, they did, except that if it didn't fit exactly the thing, then they shouldn't have gotten it. That's all. Okay. So, based on all of that, it's part of nature. If something happens that's not within the way the world is supposed to be, then there has to be something to compensate for it. It is a tikkun, it's a kapara, it fills a gap, a void, whatever it may be. It's both part of the nature of the world that there should be justice. Things cannot go without some kind of repercussion, without some kind of something to compensate. Nothing is just overlooked in this world because the world was created to be that you get what you deserve. And the reason for that was good, but it has to be then across the board. Zelu mazeh. It has to work for negative and for positive because otherwise there wouldn't be free choice in this world. So everything was created parallel. So it was created to, you get what you deserve, exactly. Right? It's part of the nature of the world for the good, but you get what you deserve if there's negative things in the world too.
Can that be, Lama Baha?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes the compensation doesn't happen in this world, happens later. But usually for tzaddikim, it happens in this world. And for Rishayim, it happens in the next world. Okay, but that we'll get to. But in any case, now he gives examples. So we already explained some of the examples. I want to explain the other ones. Yosef, I don't remember we said this, we did explain this in a Chumash here on Shabbos, but I don't think we explained it here. And since not everybody comes to the Chumash here on Shabbos, I'll explain it again, because I really like the explanation since it's mine. Yosef, Lefisha Omer, Lesara Mashkim, Ki Imzechartani Itcha, Nisos Velo Shtei Shonim, Kemaimer Chazal, right? That Chazal said that Yosef, because he asked the Sara Mashkim to remember him to Paro, he was punished with an extra 2 years in prison. So, what's the Mida Keneged Mida over here? So some say, well, he said two extra words, Zichartani, Vihiskartani, he should have said only one, so he said two. So he's punished with 2 years, which doesn't really explain the thing because it could have been 2 weeks, 2 hours, 2 months. Why 2 years? Secondly, what was the problem? You're supposed to make ishtadlus, right? You're supposed to try to do things in a natural way. So he had an opportunity here to get to Paro's ear from this Sara Mashkim who had to be in prison. So he told them, remember me to Paro. What was so terrible? So they say that he could have just said, remember me to Paro, but he should have said remember me and not remember me to Paro, but Yosef said too much, did too much ishtadlus. So therefore he was punished, but the only too much was the extra word, not both words. So they say no, once he did extra, then even the original wasn't good. It blemished the whole thing. Okay. Others say that Yosef on his level shouldn't have done ishtadlus. Ishtadlus is for people who need it. In other words, God deals with you on the level that you're on. But if you're on a very high level of bitachon, you don't need to go to a doctor. You don't need to go and earn a living. You can do a minimal amount, and the Rabbanu Shem will take care. Because you need to do what will make the result not miraculous. God doesn't do miracles for people. because then there wouldn't be any free choice. So if the result of your lack of hishtadlus or minimal hishtadlus to you would be a miracle, then it won't help. But if to you it would be natural, you believe that anyway God controls the world. So what difference does it make if you go to work or that's the Maisa with the Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld that I always like to quote. He, what's it called, he had a shita that he never loaned money, borrowed money from anybody, never borrowed anything, and if they were in a situation where they didn't have, they just didn't have. And he had bitachon, the Rabbanu Shlomo will take care. And once he didn't have bread in the house, and the children were crying for food. And he left the house in the morning, he came back, and he found a half a loaf of bread on the table, and that he asked his wife, where'd the bread come from? She said, I couldn't take it anymore. The kids were crying, they were hungry, we had nothing in the house, so I borrowed a loaf of bread. He said, okay. He said, until now, I thought that we were both on the same level of bitachon or whatever, but, you know, I have no complaints against you that, you know, you had to borrow a loaf of bread, but now I see that as a husband I have a responsibility to go and do ishtablis to earn a living, because I thought until now we didn't have to do that, but now I see I have to. So he put on his coat and he left the house, and somebody followed him. What is he going to do? Go drive a cab? What exactly is ishtablis is Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld going to do now to earn a living? So he went to the gates of the city, in other words, to the old city, to the one of the Sha'arim, or Shar Yafo, whatever, kicked around the sand a little bit, found the gold coin, picked it up, put it in his pocket, came home. That was his shtadlus. Now, if that would have happened to me, I probably never would stop talking about it, right? It would be like, you know, on the internet and whatever, what a miracle of miracles. But he didn't think it was a miracle. If I go to work and I get a check, why is that any less miraculous than kicking around? It makes sense, kick around the stone. A lot of people walk through that gate. Probably people lost money. I found it. It wasn't. If the Rabbanu Shlomo wants to give me a parnasa, he can do it, and he wants me to do the ishtadlus, then it'll work with that. And it's no less miraculous to get a paycheck, if you think about it. But to us, it's not like that. To us, getting a paycheck seems to be normal, and kicking around in the sand seems to be a miracle. So therefore, the Rabbanu Shlomo doesn't do for us what he did for Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. You can't fool yourself. You have to be on the level that you're on. And that's the way the Rabbanu Shlomo deals with you. So since Yosef was on such a tremendous level of bitachon and emunah, for him to do this ishtadlus was wrong. It's because he was so great. In fact, the Midrashim say, Ashrei ha'ish ha'shelo holach b'rohavim, whatever, that's Yosef. And then it says, what's it called? That Yosef is the one who went after the, what's it called, went after the Saramashkin. Because he was on such a high level, that's why he was held more responsible. That's another way of looking at it. I have my own idea, and I think that it has some merit to it, more than some merit, but in any case. The idea is like this. It explains why 2 years, Dafka, and what was wrong with what Yosef did. He's supposed to do hishtadlus. Hishtadlus, the Mishlem Liol says, is never cause and effect. It's not that God left over now, that you make the effect. You go earn a living. So you work, and the effect is that you have a living. So you make your living. You make a living. It's not true. You don't make a living. You deserve getting the Rabbanu Shel Olam to give you a living by making your hishtadlus. So it doesn't look like it's miraculous. So, but it's not a cause and effect. Right? And it's clear like that, that people can do all the right things and not have a living. And people can do all the wrong things and make a great living. Right? So, you know, it's surely that it's not always cause and effect, and therefore it's never cause and effect. So what is it? It's a condition. It's a prerequisite. You have to put in the effort, and the Rabbanu Shlomo then will do his part. He won't do his part if you don't do the effort. You don't put in the effort. But you have to make the effort. But in the end, it's the Rabbanu Shlomo who either makes people rich or poor. Mie Oni, Mie Osher is all Gezeiros Hashem. Okay. So, therefore, when Yosef said, remember me to Paro, he fulfilled the condition. And then, how it would work out, that's the Rabbanu Shlomo's business. But Yosef made it seem, whether he meant that or not, but he gave the impression that he's the one orchestrating how it's going to work out. You remember me, and remember me to Paro, and he's like, you know, the director. And he thinks he's causing that he's going to be taken out of prison because he's of his ishtadlus. His ishtadlus is not just a condition, it's a cause. That was what was wrong. Therefore, the Rabban Shlom said, because there's another question here. L'chora, if the Rabban Shlom wanted to teach Yosef a lesson, I don't need your ishtadlus to get you out of prison. I can do it without you. Then why did he get him out of prison the exact same way they thought he was going to get out? By having the Sarah Mashkim remember him to Paro. The Rabban Shlom, if he wanted to teach him a lesson, should have made the Sarah Mashkim die, never remember him to Paro, and he should have gotten out of prison because there was an earthquake and the prison collapsed. Now, nothing to do with the Sarah Mashkim. But he got out exactly as he thought he was going to get out. The answer is that it's clear that Yosef made the ishtadlus, but it's also clear that he didn't cause it. How so? The Gemara says that a person can remember something to act upon it for a year, 12 months. More than that, it gets filed away in the back of your mind, and you don't really, it's not really fresh in your mind to do something about it. So how long could the Sarah Mashkim have remembered Yosef? 12 months. If on the last day of those 12 months he told Paro, how long could Paro remember to do something about it to get Yosef out of prison? Another 12 months. That means after 2 years, it couldn't have happened because of what Yosef said 2 years earlier. And yet it happened the exact same way he thought it would. That means that it wasn't him who caused it, it was the Rabban Shlom who did it. I'll do it the exact same way you think, but you're not going to be the cause. I'm going to do it and prove to you because it's going to be 2 years later. That was why the 2 years. So that was the Mida Keneged Mida. Your mistake was not that you made ishtadlus. You're supposed to make ishtadlus. And not even that you made too much ishtadlus. But you made ishtadlus that seemed to imply that you were the director of how it's going to work out. And that's not the case. You're never the director. You just fulfill a condition. The Rabban Shlom then takes over. And therefore, the Mida Keneged Mida was, I'm going to get you out exactly as you thought that you caused, but you didn't cause it because it happened 2 years later. That's the, in my estimation, the Mida Keneged Mida. Next thing. Yosef Atzmo al Shechona des Ovid Beli Rishuso Shel Mokom Olefi Sheshoma Avdecho Avinu V'Shosak L'Marke D'Islei L'Marke D'Islei Meis Lifnei Echov. Another thing. Yosef died 10 years before the other brothers. He was the first one to die. When in fact, he should have been the last one to die because he was one of the youngest. But he died early, right, before the brothers. Why? For one of two sins. So in Chazal, there are two different opinions. One is that he embalmed his father without, what's it called, getting rishus from the Rabban Shlom. In other words, he was embalmed, which wasn't the proper thing to do. Now, the Shaila was what embalming is. Embalming, the way it's done today, is usher because it's nivul hames. It's a desecration of the body. Real embalming is you open up the person, take out all his inner organs, discard them, I guess, fill up the person with formaldehyde, cotton, like you stuff an animal, right? And they do that. There is embalming like that. By Goyim, they do it because they have viewings. They keep the person around for sometimes a month, or surely weeks, right, before they bury him. So normally a person would decompose, right? It wouldn't be a great wake, you know, if they have this decomposing body. So they embalm the person, basically stuff him like a stuffed animal, right, preserve him, and he could stay around for weeks or whatever without decomposing, and they have viewings. Right? Somebody told me that they once went to a funeral, a goyish funeral, and the guy was embalmed. Well, he was embalmed. But they stuffed him like an animal, and he was his favorite hobby was tennis. So they propped him up in the casket, sitting up, holding a tennis racket. And everybody, you know, I'm sure his game wasn't that great at that time. But the guy said he couldn't hold himself in. He, like, you know, he started burst out laughing, and he got to run out of the funeral home because it was the most absurd thing he ever saw in his life. Right, everybody was coming to watch. It was like, you know, a museum. Here's a guy, a tennis star, embalmed. That's not what they did to Yaakov Avinu. What they did is they preserved his body by putting chemicals on the outside, which preserved the body, which was to a certain degree important because they had to transport him and bury him in Eretz Yisrael. Right, it was a long time till they finally buried him in Eretz Yisrael. So Yosef was punished. But first of all, why was he punished then? He did something that L'chora was necessary. All the Egyptians did it. They all were embalmed. And he didn't embalm them in a way that was a nivel. It was all external. So I was thinking for two things. And I have to see what was the Mida Kenegami, that he died before his brothers. So one idea I thought of is that it says that Yaakov Avinu didn't die. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, then why did they bury him, and why did they eulogize him, why did they embalm him, if he didn't die? So the Gemara says that the Maaser, the Pasuk says, he didn't die, it's Kasha, right? He looked like he was dead. But Yosef should have been more sensitive to the fact that he didn't need to be embalmed, because he really wasn't dead. There was still a connection between his neshama and his body. That's what it means, he wasn't dead. There wasn't a total separation. And because of that, the body wouldn't decompose, because the neshama was still connected to a certain degree. It wasn't alive, obviously. They buried him. But the decomposition is when the neshama leaves completely. But as long as there's still some connection, that will hold the body from decomposing. Yosef should have been sensitive to that. And because he wasn't, right, he died earlier. Because he wasn't sensitive to the fact that his father didn't die, so he was punished. The fact that he died earlier, that's the Mida Kenegamida. That's one idea. But I was thinking of another idea, because it also answers the second. The second opinion was that he listened to the brothers call his father, your servant, and didn't do a thing about it. Right? Now, what should he have done? He was making this whole play that he was the viceroy in Egypt. It wasn't his father. What should he say? Don't refer to your father as my servant. Right? Why not? Right? He couldn't have said anything, L'chora, but maybe he could have not let it go by, could have, you know, closed his ears or hummed a tune or something. He shouldn't have to listen to it. Maybe that was the idea. But, so what's the Mida Kenegi Mida? So why did he die before his brothers? I was thinking to answer both of them, that the idea is the following. Yosef didn't realize that the Mesorah, okay, of Yaakov Avinu, the Mesorah always goes back to the Avos, Yaakov Avinu being the last. He was the one who would pass on for all generations the traditions of Klal Yisrael. What Klal Yisrael is? Yisrael Saba. Okay, and every time we say Shema Yisrael, we have that idea. We're speaking to Yaakov Avinu, that we're faithful to what Klal Yisrael is. We're B'nai Yisrael. So he is the one who passes on the Mesorah. When Yosef embalmed his father's body, so he realized that's it. He's dead, and he needs to be preserved. Not that he's the preserver of the tradition for the future. He needs to be preserved. And that was a certain insensitivity to the godless of what Yaakov Avinu was and what he represented. He's the one who passes on the tradition. And therefore, because of that, Yosef was not the one to be the extension of Yaakov in his generation of passing on the tradition. He died before the brothers. The brothers were the ones who passed on the tradition, not Yosef. Because he didn't recognize the fact that the tradition of Klal Yisrael is from Yaakov, and everybody else is just an extension of that. You don't realize that, you're not the extension. Somebody else will pass on the Mesorah to the next generation. You'll do not die early, and the Mesorah will be passed on by the people who survive you. That's maybe the same thing with calling, letting his father be called Eved. My father is the Adon. He's the master of Jewish tradition. He's not an Eved. He's not, what's it called, the receiver. He's the transmitter. Same insensitivity. If that's the case, then you can't be the transmitter.
Isn't your side he's called the flame of God?
What?
He's known as the flame of Yaakov.
Yeah, right. Isn't he should, because he was insensitive to the fact that Yaakov Avinu was the source of all Hashpah from that point on. It all comes from, we're all B'nai Yaakov, we're B'nai Yisrael. Right? So that insensitivity made it that he, in Lamaisa, couldn't hand over the tradition. He couldn't hand over the Mesorah.
Yeah, but he's not in the flame.
Fine. That's true, too. But Lamaisa, right, there was a repercussion. You're insensitive to what your real role is. So you're not going to be able to fulfill that role completely, right? There's going to be curtailed a little bit. That's all. Okay. That explains that. The next one. Okay, next one's a little long. So, David Lefisha Karla Divrei Torah Zemiros Nenash Nechshol Bedover Uzav Nisarva Simchasa. David HaMelech said, Zemiros Hayelichu Kecha. The Torah is like a song. So the Rosh said, the Torah is a song? That's a call. How can you refer to the Torah as a song? Because of that, he was punished that he forgot that you had to carry the Aron, the Torah, manually, and not put it on a, personally, and not put it on a wagon. And he put the Aron on a wagon, and then it was looked like it was falling off, and Uzzah went and tried to support it, and he died because he touched the Aron. And it ruined the whole simcha of bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim. So again, what's the Midah Kenegedim? First of all, why was David punished? Because he called the Torah Zemiros. The Torah calls itself a Shira. Kisvu Lachem Sashira Azos is the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah. Torah is referred to many times in Tehillim as a Shir. Right? So what's the problem? So we've explained in the past, there's a difference between Shira and Zimra. Shira is the expression of a person's essence. It's a song that emanates from a person's essence. Shir, Yashar. Shir has come from the word straight. The word lashur, or to gaze, to see. It's something that a person expresses. That's the whole Perek Shira. Perek Shira is the trees say this, dogs say this, cats say this. They don't actually say anything. But their essence expresses this concept. That's their Shir. Everybody's Shir, a Malach Shir, is expressing his essence. That's what Shira is. Shira is the expression of the essence of something. And Zmira, on the other hand, is an outside thing. Zimra comes from the word Zmira, which means to prune. What do you do by pruning? You take something, cut off some of the branches to give a boost. Yeah, but there's a word with an in something. It gives a boost to the, it's an outside stimulus. That's what I'm looking for. Which starts with in. No, it's a stimulus, right? An outside stimulus that stimulates a thing to grow from the outside. Okay, it's not the essence. It's adding to the essence. So, therefore, Torah is the essence. It's the kihem chayenu. It's not an outside stimulus. David HaMelech, by calling the Torah Zmiros, gave the impression the Torah is merely an outside stimulus. It's not part of the essence of a person. It's a Shira, but it's not a Zimra. Therefore, what was his mistake? Mida Kenega Mida. The mistake was that you forgot that you have to carry the Torah personally, which is a symbol that you can't separate the Torah from the person. The Torah is the essence of the person. You can't put it on a wagon. You can't separate it from the person. It's not an external thing. So he made that mistake and he put it on the wagon. Seemingly now it's an external thing. And then, not only don't you think that the Torah supports you, but you think you need to support the Torah. Chofetz Chaim says, people who support Torah and think they're doing the Torah a favor, they'll get rewarded. But it's not an Eitz Chaim for them. Eitz Chaim hi l'machazikim ba. The people who understand that they don't support the Torah, Torah supports you, it's your life. So if you have a chance to support Torah, you're supporting yourself. Then it's an Eitz Chaim. Then it's Saka, the tree of life. But the people who think that they're supporting the Torah, mu'ushar, they're fortunate. They'll get rewarded. But it's not a tree of life to them. So when Uzzah saw the Aron, the Torah, falling off the wagon, he thought he needs to support it. When in fact, the Torah supports the people who carry it. It carries them. Torah is your life. It's not something that you support. It's not something external. So the whole thing fits very nicely with the Midah Kenegedim Midah. Because David HaMelech made a mistake to describe the Torah. He may not have felt like that, but he described it and caused a problem. That in the world it became a description of the Torah as something external, an external stimulus, like a Zmira, not a Shira. So he made a mistake to deal with the Torah in a way that was not, that didn't show its essential, it's just an external thing. And because of that came a person who not only thought that, not that the Torah supports me, but I need to support the Torah, right? That's already a total distortion from that he touched the Aron and died. So the whole thing is a result of what the Avera was. So this concept that there's a consequence. There's a reaction. If you make that mistake, and give that bad impression, it's going to have repercussions, right? Consequences in nature, and it's going to end up leading to a negative consequence because you did this negative thing. It's not going to just float away. It's going to make its mark. It's mamish exactly the mida keneged mida. You see what the result was from what the sin was. So it works perfectly.